Lecture 30, The Naval War.
We will return to the military side of the conflict now with this lecture, but we'll move from land to water and begin a two-part consideration of the naval side of the Civil War. In this lecture, we'll look at the naval resources that each side had going into the war and how they tried to make the most of those resources. We'll look at strategic planning in a naval sense on both sides. And then we will have a consideration of the blockade, which was one of the key features of the naval side of the conflict. But let's begin by looking at each side's resources and strategies, and we'll start with the North. The Civil War was one of the great watersheds in American naval history. It brought naval activity on a scale undreamed of at any point earlier in our history. It spurred technological change and experimentation on a wide scale in ordnance, naval architecture, and propulsion. And it taught strategic lessons that were difficult to ignore. For example, the failure of commerce raiding against a powerful naval opponent. The North went into the war without a powerful navy. We've seen before in class that the United States Navy only had a few dozen ships in commission at the outset of the conflict, and just 42 of those 90 that were available to the Navy, at least in theory, were actually on station, most of them overseas. The Navy had 1,500 officers and 7,600 seamen at the outset of the war. Very few ships available for immediate service against the Confederacy, just a handful. But what the North did have was enormous capacity to build vessels and to arm them. It had the shipbuilding facilities, the industrial capacity to produce engines and ordnance, and tens of thousands of merchant seamen. Secretary of the Navy Gideon Welles would prove to be one of the strongest, most effective members of Abraham Lincoln's cabinet. He was a man who actually looked like Father Neptune. He was almost completely bald, but he wore a huge white wig that reached almost to his shoulders and had a full white beard. He attacked the Union's naval problems very diligently, and soon the Navy had more and more and more vessels patrolling the oceans off the coast of the Confederacy and patrolling the rivers that coursed through the Confederacy. The North began by converting merchant vessels into naval vessels and embarked on a mammoth building program. By the end of 1864, 3.5 years after the opening of hostilities, the United States Navy had 671 ships in commission, 236 of which were steam warships built during the war, and 70 of which were shallow draft ironclads. By the end of the war, early in the summer of 1865, the United States Navy was the largest in the world. It had more vessels even than Britain's Royal Navy. 60,000 sailors manned those vessels, and expenditures for the Navy rose from about $12 million in 1861 to $123 million a year by 1865. Northern industrial might was thus brought to bear to create this massive naval strength in a fashion that would anticipate what the United States would do in World War II, for example. Begin with very modest resources and then just outproduce your opponent. Gideon Welles and Congress also brought organizational changes to the Navy as it fought the war. With steam dominating the massive building program, Congress in July 1862 reorganized the naval bureaucracy. It created new bureaus, combined others, and included in this reorganization was a new Bureau of Steam Engineering, which would, of course, focus on that key element of building this new Navy. Welles and Congress worked together to reorganize the staffing of the Navy. They retired many older officers who were either unfit for service or unfit in terms of their ability, or unfit because they were infirm but had remained on the list because there was no paid retirement then. Provided, in fact, for mandatory retirement at age 62 or after 45 years of service in the Navy. Set up 9 ranks for line officers, capped by the rank of admiral, which was a rank the United States Navy had not had in the antebellum period. So there are a lot of changes going on structurally within the Navy, at the same time that it is exploding in growth.